The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Patty Friedman, author of several book series and the new ebook with the improbable name of Too Jewish. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Immigration is always a hot topic here in southern Arizona, where I live, and always controversial. If we aren't busy making it legal for police to stop anyone who might not be born here, then we are busy trying to make it illegal for people without elaborate documentation to buy gas or food or get medical care. Never a dull moment on the immigration front in Arizona. But a recent visit to my own Temple Emmanuel by a group of USC Hillel College students highlighted a new possible advantage to our consistent challenge dealing with the question of normalizing or rationalizing our broken immigration system. We can now do immigration tourism, have people come into our backyard and learn firsthand about how fouled up our whole approach is. These were nice, earnest, sincere students led by a young rabbi who was also very bright and very earnest and very sincere. And as they eagerly shared their experiences with me, learning about the border and immigration and humanitarian concerns and so on, and as they went out to leave water jugs in the desert, jugs, mind you, instead of filling the water stations up that are already out there. Anyway, it occurred to me that we here in Arizona are just missing a wonderful economic opportunity. We could be making real money on this, selling immigration tourism. We could invite well-meaning liberals out here to see the real conditions where people walk through the desert or climb rocky mountains filled with cactus and coyotes of both kinds. I'm sure they'd pay well for the privilege of being part of this cutting-edge social experience. Or we could also invite conservatives here to see the barbed wire and the border patrol trucks, the detention facilities, the nighttime searchlights and motion sensors, and to personally inspect the tunnels under the border. Look, our economy hasn't been so good lately. We really could use a little more tourism after scaring so many people away. What if we open it up to everyone in this innovative manner? Or we could approach it in a different, more Jewish way. How about if instead we explore the issue of immigration from the perspective of a people who have been immigrants throughout history, in every age and every land, who know immigration intimately from the earliest times? In the Passover Seder, it's coming up in a couple of weeks, we say, "My father was a wandering Aramean, Arameo Vedavi," meaning either Abraham or Jacob, both fit the description of wandering Aramean. "And after we got out of Egypt, we wandered for 40 more years under Moses, who was already twice an immigrant before he even led the people out of Egypt. Oh, and don't forget 2,000 years of wandering in exile, the perpetual wandering Jews, or the fact that our country, Israel, is made up of Jewish immigrants from something like 150 different countries, immigrants all. We know immigration. And so, to know what issues immigration really involves, to understand the challenge of being immigrants and living in an immigrant society, the coming Passover season can teach us the lessons of compassion and understanding based on real practical knowledge that helps make this issue comprehensible, clear, and, God willing, perhaps even manageable. So, coming soon, in a fortnight, to a Seder near you, an immigrant's understanding of the central message of humanity. Everyone deserves the chance to live in freedom." play us in this morning on this pre-Passover preview edition of Too Jewish, our Pesachdik preliminaries. Here's Betzeit Yisrael, the Passover psalm to a setting by the Jewish Beethoven, Louis Lewandowski, as sung by the Western Winds.
Betzeit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, bis Yaakov ve'aretz, ha'esor Yehudah le'kashem, Yisrael ma'ak shelosov, ha'yom ra'av ha'yaretz, ha'yarden Yisrael le'achor, e'horim rab k'duche'elim, e'vos k'ivnetzov. Ma lecho hayom ki solus, hayotem ki sobeacha, lecho in kir kduchelim, kevos ki metzom, milif me'adon voli arets, milif me'adon.
That was Betzeit Yisrael, the psalm for Passover, coming up in just over 2 weeks as sung by the Western Winds. When we return on this beautiful morning, we'll meet our guest, the delightful New Orleans Jewish author, Patty Friedman, and find out about e-books and what's unique about Jews in the Crescent City and why you would want to call a book Too Jewish when we come back on the radio show Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, most of the time I'm talking about the great pizza we serve at Mama's, but not today. Nope. Today I want to tell you about our calzones. A calzone is kind of like a stuffed pizza. It's made of dough wrapped around whatever ingredients you want, like pepperoni, mushrooms, or even artichoke hearts. There's lots of cheese inside, and it's served with a cup of marinara sauce. Our calzones are huge. We had a guy order two of them over the phone, and when he picked them up, he couldn't believe it. There were only two people eating, and two large calzones feed 6 to 8 people easy. You know, it wouldn't hurt you to try a calzone next time you're in. Then, if they get real popular, we might have to change our name to Mama's Calzones. Mama's Pizza, 4500 East Speedway in the Midway Business Park, on the east side of 22nd and Colb and back at the Fry Shopping Center, on the north side at the southwest corner of Oracle and McGee, and on newest at Broadway and Houghton. Now repeat after me, Mama's Pizza.
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through 8th grade. It has a long-standing track record of academic excellence and an unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum, with a variety of music and fine arts classes combined with the award-winning sports program THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking skills, and respect for diverse points of view. THA's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date proven research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. THA students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. They are enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll your child and to schedule a tour, call 529-3888 or visit THAAZ.org. That's 529-3888 for THA. We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Patty Friedman. You know, it's not that often I get to introduce someone whose latest new accomplishment is called Two Jewish. And I know you're not copying us, but her new book, it's an e-book, Two Jewish, has just been released by the publisher Books Be Nimble. The book Two Jewish is a compelling look at the story of a family forever shadowed by the Holocaust. Patty, how did you come up with the title? I just have to ask.
Well, actually, I sat down with the publisher and several of her cohorts, and we batted it around and batted it around. And I finally remembered a phrase from my mother's side of the family where they would say with a certain degree of contempt, "Oh, she's too Jewish." And I thought that kind of encapsulates the attitude of the distaff side of my family toward my father, who was an immigrant who escaped from Nazi Germany, and even though it was never expressed, that was sort of what condemned him within the family to which he tried to assimilate himself. So I used that autobiographical material as the foundation for this book.
You know, you grew up in New Orleans yourself, I think, right? And how much of this is autobiographical?
This is my most autobiographical work. All my previous books were set in New Orleans, but these were not Jewish characters at all. And this is my first time getting up the nerve to poke around in what was a pretty painful childhood, because I grew up in this, what I call, mixed marriage, even though both of my parents were Jewish. And I am pretty unabashed about the fact that I explored all of this real personal material.
You know, I think people don't realize that there are Jews in the South. Here, even in southern Arizona, people aren't too clear on that. I lived in South Carolina for 4 years, which is a very interesting Jewish community. New Orleans Jewish community is kind of unique, isn't it?
It really is. One of the things that I had to bring out, and I think there's a certain humorous edge to it, is how strongly the Jews in New Orleans, at least, try to conceal how Jewish they are. New Orleans is an extremely Catholic city. New Orleans has just had Mardi Gras. And in the crew that dominates Mardi Gras, Rex, a lot of Jewish people have kind of sublimated their Jewish origins in order to fit in this community. And that was the community that my father found himself trying to belong to, because the synagogue in which my mother belonged and to which my father wound up belonging, it almost looks like a church. There's stained glass windows, and, well, the exterior certainly doesn't look particularly Jewish. It's a very strange place to be Jewish. I know my brother actually is a rabbi, and he's had a pulpit in the South as compared to a pulpit that he had in the North. And when he moved from the North to the South, he immediately began to eat shellfish.
We will talk much more a little later on Two Jewish with Patty Friedman about Jews in the South, about her new e-book called Two Jewish, when we come back this morning.
Choosing the proper care for your mother, father, or other loved one isn't easy. David Shackman and his wife, Ann, are New Yorkers who recently found a home at Handmaker, Tucson's premier provider of assisted living and senior care.
I'm 88 years old. My wife is 86. And we like staying at Handmaker because people here are very courteous and the atmosphere is nice.
Well, I like the program here because they have entertainers, have a bingo. They made a luau with Hawaiian dances.
Handmaker gives their son, Ken, peace of of mind.
I know that they are going to get good service, and the staff will treat them as friends.
Handmaker, centrally located on Rosemont just south of Grant, includes one and two-bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, and Tucson's most caring staff. Call 881-2323.
The food here is excellent. It's as good as any good restaurant in New York City.
For a consultation and tour, call 881-2323 or go to handmaker.org.
Passover is coming up fast, so why is this night different from all other nights? Because you can spend it with Rabbi Sam Kohan, enjoying a Seder in a way that makes Passover live and breathe as never before, for every age. And this year, it's part of the 100th anniversary of Temple Emmanuel, which makes this an even more extraordinary night. To truly experience this great festival of freedom, join Rabbi Sam Kohan for a second night Passover Seder that's simply the finest in Southern Arizona. This celebration is on Tuesday night, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel. Reservations are a must. Call 520-327-4501. The food is great and kosher, but it's the stories, songs, and spirit of Rabbi Kohan that make this a Seder you'll never forget. Learn, enjoy, laugh, cry, and eat well. Call 327-4501 to make your reservation now for Tuesday, April 19th, a memorable second night of Passover with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Or, if you live on the northwest side of Tucson, there'll also be a second night Seder in the northwest with Rabbi Jason Holtz. Call 327-4501 for more information.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism of Kvetch or Kfell, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Well, everyone's visiting Israel these days. Last week it was Sarah Palin, but this week's tourist is actually a returnee who started out there. Yes, 52 years after leaving Israel as an impoverished 9-year-old son of a survivor of the Auschwitz camp, Chaim Vitz returned to his birth country under different circumstances as mega millionaire, rock star, and TV personality Gene Simmons of KISS. "It's amazing to be back here," said the now 61-year-old co-founder of KISS in Jerusalem's David Citadel Hotel. His entourage there has taken over 8 rooms. He's in Israel with his longtime companion, former actress Shannon Tweed, remember her? And their son Nick to film episodes of a U.S. reality TV show, part of Gene Simmons' Family Jewels. So tasteful. "One thing that's striking is that I never remember seeing so many yarmulkes here," said Simmons. "It's all of a sudden teeming with Hasidim, but I don't believe them," he said, kind of being like a rapper. "I'm used to Israel as a secular place where people are just Israelis. I prefer it modern, not so archaic." Simmons still speaks Hebrew, which was his first language. He moves a little slower than he did when he was spitting blood on stage as the front man and bassist for KISS, which was rock's biggest spectacle group in the 70s. But even without the sci-fi makeup, the very long tongue stuck out, and the 10-inch platform shoes, he is still a magnetic personality. He's sold over 100 million records while he and KISS, and he continues to draw sellout crowds, has a whole multi-million dollar business empire, KISS video games, comics, a KISS credit card. Would you do that? Anyway, Gene Simmons' rags-to-riches story is a little deeper than most. His father, a carpenter in Tirath Carmel in Israel, was barely able to make a living for his wife and son. Simmons' Hungarian-born mother, Flora, left her husband and moved with the young Chaim Vitz to Jackson Heights, Queens in 1960, pursuing the American dream. But they were not far from the European nightmare the family had experienced in the Holocaust. Flora was in Auschwitz at age 14. Her mother, grandmother, and almost all of her family went to the gas chambers, but Simmons, whose name was changed to Gene Klein and then eventually Gene Simmons, didn't get the story until much, much later. "When I was growing up," said Simmons, "my mother hardly ever talked to me about Nazi Germany and the camps because she didn't want to upset me, and I didn't ask her about it. But over the years, I started to learn more and more about it, how my entire family was killed, how my mother saw her mother go with her grandmother to the gas chambers." Although he had never returned to Israel in the half century since he left, Simmons has always been an ardent supporter of Israel, most recently sending a televised message to an IDF soldier and KISS fan who was wounded during the 2006 Lebanon war with Hezbollah, in which he called him a hero. Kiss never appeared in Israel, but Gene Simmons has dismissed other entertainers who have boycotted the country as idiots. Sounds like an Israeli. As an American, there's no choice but to be supportive of Israel, says Gene Simmons. This is the Holy Land, and it's no secret that everybody in America perceives Israel as its only real friend in the Middle East. Who else are you going to rely on? You know, I kind of like Gene Simmons better now than I did when Kiss was so popular. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Israel Center. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So lots of news, a pretty constant stream from the Middle East, one Arab country or another. First, it was all revolutions. Now it's counter-revolutionary activities, whether it's Libya, Bahrain, all around. What do Israelis think about all of this change? Mubarak, after all, was head of Egypt for 40 years. Gaddafi's been in Libya since 1970. You know, there was a lot of stability. Not great, pleasant stability, but stability. How do Israelis feel about it?
Well, I think one of the facts that those revolutions expose is that the main issues within the Arab worlds are not connected with Israel. In many cases, Israel was used as the excuse. We teach our people to hate Israel, and they will focus on that and won't focus on their own poverty or all internal issues. Many Israelis are quite concerned with the changes in the Middle East. On one hand, like any person in the world, we do have a hope for democracy within the Arab world. We are all sure that if the Arab world will have a real democracy, that would be the best thing for all of us. But looking at Arab countries, looking at the Palestinian Authority, looking at Egypt and other places, those countries don't seem to have the infrastructure in place that will encourage real democracy. Usually real democracy needs to be created based on strong economical background, needs to be based on strong, whether it's unions or different organizations that have enough power, so they need to split the power between them. You need to have a street that have an open voice, that people can speak and feel safe enough to speak and say what they're really thinking. And the Arab world today doesn't seem to fit those definitions. So it's really hard to say what will be. And we truly hope we won't find ourselves with a darker Arab world that is led by more extreme movements that, for instance, try to force the Sharia law on all the Arab nations and even becoming more aggressive in its approach towards Israel.
You know, I wonder sometimes in Israel, isn't the feeling better the devil we know than the devils we don't? Nobody is exactly a fan of Gaddafi in Israel. Nobody was a big fan of the Assads in Syria, and yet what might follow may not be any better.
Well, history unfortunately teaches us that in many cases, this is exactly the case. Iran Revolution just showed one example where the power that took control over after the revolution was by far worse than the power
than the Shah originally.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's like the old Jewish telegram, start worrying, facts to follow. Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant J Bar in Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
It is the prettiest time of year now, isn't it?
It's J-Bar time. Time to sit outside on the porch, get a margarita. I didn't tell you this. We just won best margaritas in Tucson at J-Bar. Mm. Sit outside, have a margarita, serve some great food. Be thankful you live here in Southern Arizona.
It is a wonderful time of year. What's special on the menu now?
Well, right now, all our food from the farmers are coming in. So peas and pea shoots and carrots and radishes and citrus. So all of those things are finding their way on the menu in preparations with trout and rabbit and beef and duck. Great fun foods of the region. Great flavors. Great time to be there.
Boy, I'm hungry and thirsty just hearing about it. What's the phone number?
615-6100.
And it's www.janos.com.
Rabbi, you always know how to find me.
And I love to. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So you were in Marrakesh when last we met you, and you were in a hotel with a large group of Hasidic youngish men in their 20s and 30s. And what the heck were they doing in Marrakesh, Morocco, which has an ancient Jewish history and a wonderful melech and a lot of fantastic stuff, but not notable for its Hasidism?
Right. And it turns out that this group was completely unaware that there is a functioning synagogue still in Marrakesh. There is at least theoretically a kosher restaurant, and there is...
I have been to both, and they're kind of neat.
Right. There's modern Jewish life that they could have contacted had they chosen to do so. But what turned out eventually to be the case was my main man, Elon, introduced me to his boss, who was basically taking his employees on an annual company outing. And they had chosen not so much Marrakesh as the grave of an obscure 14th century rabbi who was buried in the Atlas Mountains to make a pilgrimage to. And they spent some time in Morocco, in the north of Morocco, before visiting this site. And then they got to Marrakesh Thursday night and prepared for Shabbat. And they travel with their own food, pots and pans, plates and cutlery, a Sefer Torah, a rent-a-rabbi that they travel with for the week, a guy who plays a guitar, a guy who makes pizza, a cook, a security guy, a carpenter, the work, you name it, they had it. And this is not a group that travels light, needless to say, but it's a group that travels prepared for every eventuality that Jews can meet. And because they're Lubavitchers, when they held Shabbat services, everybody in the hotel who was curious or Jewish or half Jewish was invited to join them. And very quickly, I was introduced to the boss, who's a very nice guy in his late 30s from Miami, who owns something like 1,200 nursing homes across the country.
Wow.
And he buys and sells large numbers of nursing homes at a time. So he has transactions that are, you know, many, many millions of dollars.
Does he want to donate to our congregation?
And I didn't ask. But he introduced me to his comptroller, who was a guy who looked like he was about 12 years old, you know, wearing a fur hat and had like three stray hairs on his face. But he's the guy who writes the checks. And I met a number of people dressed very differently, coming from very different parts of the Hasidic world. But it was hard to say whether I was more interested and surprised by meeting them or they were more interested and surprised by meeting me. They, you know, tried to determine what my level of knowledge and frumkeit was. And they had trouble with that because, as the rabbi said, you ask a lot of good questions. Are you sure you never studied Talmud? It's like, and I told him what I've often told you, I could never master Rashi script, which they found very funny.
I bet they did. All these other languages, Rashi script you can't get.
Yeah. Well, reading and writing I have trouble with in many languages. Speaking and listening are fine. Anyway, they invited me to join them for Sudash Lishi, which I did, and I listened to a shiur, and it was great. And then they wanted me to go out with them for Malava Malka, which I declined because I saw the bar they carry with them and the incredible array of 30-year-old single malt scotches and other things that they consider indispensable to any celebration. And I thought, you know, I need to get sleep more than I need to get plastered. So, but it was quite an experience. And this is also the group that first started pilgrimages to Uman in the Ukraine.
So they're the ones who started the
They're the ones who turned Uman into a... Exactly. They turned Uman into
a major Hasidic Mecca. For Hasidim. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, we can actually talk about that next week if you want.
Let's talk about that next week, Tom. Thanks. A great story, and we'll get more.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Once upon a time, in a faraway land, there lived a king who had a Jewish advisor. The king relied so much on the wisdom of his advisor that one day he decided to elevate him to head advisor. But when it was announced, the other advisors objected. After all, it was bad enough to sit in council with a Jew, but to allow one to be over them was too much. Being a compassionate ruler, the king agreed and ordered the Jew to convert. What could he do? You have to obey the king, and so he did. As soon as he was converted, the Jew felt great remorse for this terrible decision. As the days became weeks, his remorse turned to despondency, and as months passed, his mental depression took a toll on his physical health. He became weaker and weaker. Finally, he could stand it no longer. His mind was made up. He burst in on the king and cried, "I was born a Jew, and a Jew I must be. Do what you want to me, but I can no longer deny my faith." The king was very surprised. He had no idea the Jew felt so strongly about it. "Well, that's how you feel. The other advisors will just have to learn to live with it. Your counsel is too important to me to do without it. Go and be a Jew again," he said. The Jew was elated. He hurried home to tell the good news to his family. Strength surged back into his body as he ran. He broke into the house and called out to his wife, "Rivka, Rivka, we can be Jews again. We can be Jews again." His wife glared at him angrily and said, "You couldn't wait until after Pesach?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature, Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. Look, you see, if you aren't Jewish before and during Passover, then you don't have to do all the cleaning and cooking and preparing and eat matzah. Forget it. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Mitzorah focuses on the question of leprosy, a dread disease in the ancient world, but mostly an archaic and disgusting section today. It's true that leprosy was an awful thing and needed to be eliminated, in particular by using the concept of quarantines to isolate it. But exploring what our ancestors believed to be an infectious disease at great length can scarcely be called a spiritually meaningful experience. The rabbis in our tradition recognized this problem and came up with an ingenious and meaningful reinterpretation. The word mitzorah, which means leprosy, was itself, they said, an abbreviation for the term in Hebrew motzi shem ra, which means slander or evil speech. Our moral goal in life should be to completely eliminate from our lives and habits motzi shem ra, the awful tendency we all have to speak ill of others. Commit no slander, and your own life will be clean of moral illness. By purifying our speech of words that damage others, we can find our way clear to living better, holier lives. In the portion this week, it even delineates forms of mitzorah that affect the very houses in which we live, mitzorah bayit. If a house is badly enough infected with this leprosy of the property, it may even need to be destroyed, kind of along the lines of the prophetic concept that Abraham Lincoln borrowed, a house divided against itself cannot stand. If we wish to have not only personal lives, but organizations, synagogues, and communities in which holiness can flourish, the dreadful sin of slander must be eliminated as well. May we each do our part, now and always, to remove mitzorah, personal impurities of speech and action, from our own lives. When we come back, we'll talk with author Patty Friedman and find out where in the world she got the idea to name her new book, Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174.
Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Passover is coming up fast, so why is this night different from all other nights? Because you can spend it with Rabbi Sam Kohan, enjoying a Seder in a way that makes Passover live and breathe as never before, for every age. And this year, it's part of the 100th anniversary of Temple Emmanuel, which makes this an even more extraordinary night. To truly experience this great festival of freedom, join Rabbi Sam Kohan for a second night Passover Seder that's simply the finest in Southern Arizona. This celebration is on Tuesday night, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel. Reservations are a must. Call 520-327-4501. The food is great and kosher, but it's the stories, songs, and spirit of Rabbi Kohan that make this a Seder you'll never forget. Learn, enjoy, laugh, cry, and eat well. Call 327-4501 to make your reservation now for Tuesday, April 19th, a memorable second night of Passover with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Or, if you live on the northwest side of Tucson, there will also be a second night Seder in the northwest with Rabbi Jason Holtz. Call 327-4501 for more information.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israel, responding to recent rocket attacks from Gaza, is deploying a new defense system called Iron Dome. The system uses advanced cameras and radar to track, intercept, and destroy rockets before they reach their targets. The system is expected to be operational in the coming months. Over the years, Israel has experienced numerous rocket attacks launched against the southern regions of the country. While Israel has no desire in escalating armed conflict, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, "We won't hesitate to employ the might of the military against those who would attack our citizens." In the past, Israel has responded with counterattacks against Hamas and other terrorist organizations. While the military action against terrorist organizations remains an option for the Israelis, with Iron Dome defense system, they will now also be better able to defend their population against rocket attacks. And another news story from the Middle East. Just to the north of Israel, Syria, like many Arab nations, is experiencing a massive protest movement. The Syrian government, led by President Bashar Assad, has brutally cracked down on the protesters. Human rights groups estimate the death toll from the crackdown now stands at about 60 people. Responding to growing pressure, Syrian President Bashar Assad has set up a committee to investigate those deaths, as well as to look at the possibility of replacing emergency laws that have been in place for decades. Assad also suggested that other reform may be in order. Despite that limited concession, Assad maintains that any protests in his country are the result of a foreign conspiracy. And that brings us to our last story. Philip Roth, an American Jewish novelist, has been nominated for the Man Booker International Prize. He is one of only 13 authors shortlisted to receive the prestigious award. Roth is the author of numerous novels, including Portnoy's Complaint, American Pastoral, and The Plot Against America. Unlike many literary awards, this prize recognizes an author's entire literary output, rather than a single work. I'm Rabbi Jason Holtz, and that's the Jewish News.
We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Patty Friedman. She's an author of six darkly comic literary novels, all set in New Orleans. Her novels have been chosen for a variety of honors, including incorporation in the Oxford American list of the best underrated or greatest underrated Southern books. Now, is that a backhanded compliment?
It is, except that they also gave it to Gone with the Wind and Deliverance and Lesson Before Dying, so I didn't feel bad about it at all.
No, not too well. Well, you know, maybe there's a movie contract coming here. Patty, your new book is an ebook. It's called, which I think it's the best title I've ever heard on a book, Too Jewish. And it's really about the way that in the book, the character of Bernie, who is too Jewish for Letty, but really also, of course, it's kind of, as you mentioned, kind of an autobiographical description of your own family, where your dad was too Jewish for your mom's sort of upscale New Orleans Jewish family. Tell me a little bit about why you decided to make this an ebook this time.
Well, what happened was that I was part of a book that came out right after Katrina called New Orleans Noir, and the story that I contributed to that was a story of mean Jewish girls in the 1960s. And the editor of that was Julie Smith, who also was kind of stymied and confused after Katrina. And when she couldn't write anymore, she started this e-publishing company and asked me to expand on the story of these mean Jewish girls. And I wrote this novel where the story becomes the final chapter. And so the backstory became the story of the girl's father. In other words, it was my story. I was the girl in the mean girl's story. The victim, of course.
Of course.
And that's how it became this biographical piece about my father and his failure to be assimilated into this Jewish community. He had to leave Germany the day that Hitler invaded Poland, and when he came to the United States, he was routed by the army through New Orleans, which is how he met my mother, and that's what sort of happens in the story. So he wound up in New Orleans, and the rest is history. I think one of the pivotal points in the book is the fact that he never knew what happened to the mother that he had to leave behind in Germany, and he didn't want to know what happened to her. And yet when his daughter goes on a tour of Europe, his mother-in-law, who is one of these mean New Orleans women, defies his request to not take his daughter to Germany, and she takes her to Germany and does find out what happens to his mother. So that's kind of the way the story works itself out, and the book ends tragically. But I'm not going to tell how.
No, don't give that away. I think when people think about Jews in the South, maybe they think about Driving Miss Daisy or Eli Evans books, if they even know those. Jewish community in the South goes way back. Has it changed in recent years? Has it changed in the period since the period you describe in your novel?
Not really. Although, I mean... New Orleans, I think, is different from the more rural parts of the South. New Orleans is different from everywhere, so it's hard for me to speak about it. In fact, I was just talking to a friend the other day, and she was laughing about how there was a Zydeco song about Kaplan, Louisiana, and how funny it is for a town in Louisiana to be named Kaplan, and it's obvious that some Jewish merchant decided he was going to stop in this little path, you know, pig path, and set up a town, and that's why he named it after himself. But New Orleans, I don't think has changed in all the generations. I'm sixth generation in New Orleans, and my grandfather's parents left town during the Civil War because they just couldn't be bothered. They went to Panama. So I think that it's always been a matter of being assimilated and very low-key about being Jewish in New Orleans, and it still is. I don't think much has changed here.
You know, I was in Charleston, and there, if you aren't fourth-generation Jewish in Charleston, you're really not part of the town. Is that true in New Orleans, too?
It is, although, of course, you know, we've had something of a diaspora.
Right, because of
New Orleans
Katrina.
Diaspora since Katrina, and we've also had an influx of altruistic people since the storm, and you've got a lot of young Jewish people who've come here wanting to make a difference. So maybe it'll change in the future, but from what I can see, frozen right at the turn of the millennium, nothing had changed. There's still the same kind of prejudice that I think that destroyed my father, certainly.
I want to make sure that we tell people how you get the ebook a couple of times, because not everybody's used to downloading them. I have that you go to YouTube and look for Books Be Nimble. Is that correct?
Well, the best way to do it is either, you know, by getting it for your Nook or for your Kindle.
Nook or Kindle or any of the other ebooks.
Or you can go to www.booksbnimble.com. And if you don't have a handheld device, you can actually go to www.amazon.com/ was it Kindle for PC or Kindle for Mac. You can download a free Kindle for your computer. So you can read an ebook free if you just download a free Kindle.
What's your favorite book that you've written?
That I've written? My favorite book of mine is titled Secondhand Smoke. And actually, in that book, there is an issue of Jewishness, because I guess I can't resist it. The main character is a very racist.
By the way, we can't resist it either, so there's nothing wrong with that. I just.
But her son marries a Jewish woman in the North Shore suburbs of Chicago, and oh, she lets rip on that. So that's that's another kind of prejudice that comes out of New Orleans, the anti-Semitism of the non-Semites. I mean, the non-Semites in New Orleans are just as anti-Semitic as the Jews.
You know, very interesting. The survivor guilt plays an interesting part in your book, in Too Jewish. Tell me how you explored that.
Well, my father experienced it very deeply, but not very audibly. He struggled with having to leave Germany and had to face the fact that his mother refused to come with him. He was 23 years old. She was an older woman because he was born late in her life, and he had to walk away. It was just that moment where he had to leave. She wouldn't go. He had to say goodbye, and she died in the camps. And there's that survivor guilt that just colored his psyche all the rest of his life. He was a very depressed man, and it was far too early for someone like him to seek psychiatric help. He was just sad with survivor guilt all of his life, and I think I carried his grief. I think I grieved for him long before he died, so that's why it was important for me to write this book. I guess I had little pieces of it in other books, but this is the first time that I dealt with him and his story flat out, straight out, and no holds barred.
Do you think that they're the kind of mean girls that you talk about, or the people who described in the book, and probably the ones in your life, Bernie in this case, as too Jewish, was there a self-hating element?
With me, I think it was especially strong because, okay, I didn't put it in the book, but I had siblings. And so there was something of a line drawn in my house between who identified with which parent. And I identified very strongly with my father, and yet, obviously, he was the only person in his family representing his side, whereas my siblings identified much more strongly with my mother's side. So, I carried the pain for him and felt the guilt through him that I don't think anyone else did, if that makes sense.
It does. That you became, that's why they talk about second generation survivors and third generation survivors, that it goes on. You don't shed it so easily.
Yeah, my daughter has a child, and her middle name is Amalia, which is the name of my grandmother who died in the camp. So it carries on. even, you know, several generations down.
Well, let's hope that people no longer have to think about themselves as too Jewish pretty soon, but they keep buying your book and listening to this radio show.
Thank you.
I want to thank Patty Friedman for a great visit here on Too Jewish. You can find her book, Too Jewish, at Books Be Nimble. That's Books, capital B, letter B, rather, N-I-M-B-L-E, on Amazon, or and downloading the books there. Thanks so much, Patty.
Thank you, Rabbi.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll get a final musical play out and hear about next week's guest.
Passover is coming up fast, so why is this night different from all other nights? Because you can spend it with Rabbi Sam Kohan, enjoying a Seder in a way that makes Passover live and breathe as never before, for every age. And this year, it's part of the 100th anniversary of Temple Emmanuel, which makes this an even more extraordinary night. To truly experience this great festival of freedom, join Rabbi Sam Kohan for a second night Passover Seder that's simply the finest in Southern Arizona. This celebration is on Tuesday night, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel. Reservations are a must. Call 520-327-4501. The food is great and kosher, but it's the stories, songs, and spirit of Rabbi Kohan that make this a Seder you'll never forget. Learn, enjoy, laugh, cry, and eat well. Call 327-4501 to make your reservation now for Tuesday, April 19th, a memorable second night of Passover with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Or, if you live on the northwest side of Tucson, there'll also be a second night Seder in the northwest with Rabbi Jason Holtz. Call 327-4501 for more information.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We all deal with deadlines. April 15th is one we all know. This year, through a change in the Arizona legislature's tuition tax credit, you can still get your tax credit for donating to Tucson Hebrew Academy through April 15th on your 2010 taxes. Now you have an extended opportunity. Ensure Tucson Hebrew Academy has resources to provide financial aid to its needy families. This is both an honor and a privilege to support Tucson's only Jewish day school. Your gift of up to $1,000 for a couple or $500 for single filers to JETCO, the organization that supports scholarships at Tucson Hebrew Academy, the kindergarten at Anshe Israel, and the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, all of that will get you a dollar-for-dollar tax credit on your state taxes. JETCO Money provides financial assistance only to qualified students. Talk to your tax professional, like always. In order to make the donation to THA and JETCO, go to jetco.org, J-E-T-C-O.org, or call 647-8442. It's a good thing to do. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Professor Paula Fass, who more or less invented the area of the history of children. She's a professor at Berkeley, the author of the excellent new book, Inheriting the Holocaust. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Passover preview of Pesachdik music. It's from the group Safam. It's their version of the Passover psalm, B'tzeit Yisrael Mimitzrayim, when Israel came out of Egypt. Just 15 more shopping days to Passover. Time to get to it. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace. Malecha hayam kitanus, hayardeinu.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.